Welcome to part two of the AA Grapevine. This is a continuation of the June 2025 edition. My name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. The next story, The Best Gig in AA, by Jerry C. of British Columbia. A corrections volunteer in British Columbia shares about exciting advances being made to reach members inside. "We need help, folks," said Mike at a regular gathering of the mini assembly of the districts in the South Okanagan Valley in British Columbia. Mike was asking for help because his district was just too small and thinly populated to have the resources, people and funds to effectively carry the message to a newly built provisional correction facility in their neighborhood. Mike and several others had been working as hard as they could, but it just wasn't enough. A member of a neighboring district raised their hand and offered to help. So began a most satisfying and interesting journey. After a few false starts, a solution was found. There is now a small committee of AA members from across three different districts in the South Okanagan who work together to carry the message to members inside facilities through online meetings. We hope to get back to face-to-face in time. We also supply literature and multiple Grapevine subscriptions to all units inside the facility. Initial efforts to harness all three districts officially through the mini assembly structure were not successful, but we kept trying. By seeking support and being patient, eventually the larger of the three districts decided to create a corrections chair at its district table for the newly opened facility in the neighboring district, even though it had no correctional facility within its own district boundaries. Over time, AA members from the other districts have come forward to join the efforts and create a multi-district team of folks helping to carry on with this work. When the pandemic shut down our face-to-face effort, it took a patient wait and persistent contact with the responsible staff at the institution to accept the idea of online meetings. From an initial undertaking of one AA member hosting a gathering of interested insiders once a week, this work has grown to two AA meetings a week hosted by a small committee of eight AA outsiders and attended by anywhere from 8 to 20 insiders. The icing on the cake for this work is that we have recently learned that there are now face-to-face meetings being organized and run by members inside. Using the formats, scripts, and literature the online AA meetings modeled for them, and the materials we provided, our efforts are spreading. It's so cool to be a part of this. From the beginning, we knew that our AA literature, including Grapevine, was an important part of carrying the message. At our mini assemblies, we asked groups and districts to bring literature. We collect it for the facility's library we maintain in cooperation with the chaplains. We also dedicate some district funding from two of the three districts, those that are big enough and financially able to do so, to purchase Grapevine subscriptions mailed directly to the facility and distributed by the chaplains. We also encourage members to use Grapevine's gift subscription plan to add to that stock. AA literature is plentifully available inside now. And of note recently, copies of the new book, Our Stories, First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Recovery, recently published by Area 79, has been added to the facility's library. All of this good work was done as a result of two very important elements: the cooperation and support of the staff inside the facility, with whom a great working relationship has been patiently built and maintained, and a persistent and enduring effort of AA members well-schooled in the importance of cooperation, patience, and trust in a higher power. The Correctional Institute recently held one of its regular Volunteer Appreciation Day events, and the deputy warden highlighted AA for the positive impact our work was having in the lives of many people inside. See one of the inside members' story, The Day Hope Arrived, in this issue. I'm deeply grateful to have been able to help in this work and thankful that Mike from District 64 was humble enough to simply say, "We need help," nearly 5 years ago now. Finally, the single most significant payoff for the AA member to do this work is found in the actual AA meetings inside. Not all of us have done time, though many more of us should have, perhaps. However, all of us can relate to feelings of confusion, shame, despair, sadness, regret, and hopelessness that can so often be felt with those on the inside. The chance to offer shared experience and hope that comes from knowing that we can offer a way out is powerful. Our current corrections committee chairperson says it this way: it's the best gig in AA. And that's the end of that story. Moving on, A New Freedom by Anonymous from Coleman, Florida. From a 9 by 12 foot cell, he maintains hope each day with the help of meetings, friends, family, and God. I came into AA in 2001 and bounced in and out of the rooms for more than 5 years before I was ready to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. I finally got sober in 2006, and my life has been forever changed. Brick by brick, I began to take down the walls of isolation I had built around myself and stopped wallowing in my own self-pity. I found a sponsor who had what I wanted and listened to his suggestions and became willing to try something different. Slowly but surely, I started to get my life back. Friends and family wanted to spend time with me and even invited me into their homes again. My co-workers interacted with me in a more positive manner. One even remarked that she didn't know I could be a nice guy. I began to have a healthy social life, not centered around alcohol. I could not only handle responsibility, but I looked forward to it. I even had my first healthy romantic relationship. For the first time in a very long time, I was having fun. But my life soon dramatically changed. When I had 3 years sober, my world came crashing down. My house was raided by the FBI, ATF, and DHS. I got arrested for a crime I committed years ago while drunk and high. I knew at the time that what I was doing was not only wrong, but illegal, but I just didn't care back then. My first instinct was to say it was not my fault, but AA showed me how to be a man. I accepted responsibility for my actions and took a plea. I was sentenced to 25 years. Throughout the whole legal ordeal, I was able to stay sober because of my connection with my higher power and AA. I'm so lucky. I get to attend weekly AA meetings here in the prison. Over the past 11 years, I've managed to stay sober through a lot of drama, such as surprise last-minute transfers to other prisons, seeing a man get killed, living through a riot, a Category 5 hurricane, and a pandemic, all while locked in a 9-by-12-foot cell. Nothing here is guaranteed. But by the grace of God, I have a sponsor, members of AA, and friends and family who answer my phone calls and respond to my emails. I have people in my life who care for me and love me, and I get to love them back. With good time, I could be released from prison in 2031. That may seem like a long way off, but with my higher power and the help of AA, I will make it through. I'm not going to lie. I have my bad days, lots of them. But as long as I turn things over to the God of my understanding, I know I'm going to be all right. And all right is good for me today. And that's the end of that story. The next story is entitled A New Dad, and this is on Step 6 by Greg B. of Herndon, Virginia. During a painful divorce, the newcomer father learns through Step 6 to let go of fear and focus on the joy. Ever since my early days in AA, I felt pain when a newcomer would enter the rooms with his supportive wife by his side. It upset me when someone shared about how their family supported them in recovery, and now they were stronger than ever. I was going through a divorce at the time and had no support from my wife, and none was forthcoming. It hurt to see what others had and to hear how the program was saving marriages when I was losing mine, especially while I was working what I felt and what other people told me was a good program. Outside the rooms, I often felt bad when I would see my kids and their mother, which was a lot, since we were all living in the same house during the separation. I enjoyed spending time with my boys, but at times would be overwhelmed by the intense pain. Going to meetings, reading the literature, doing step work, prayer, meditation, fellowship, and my sponsor got me through this very rough time without picking up a drink. Since completing my third step, which for me was also when the fog of drinking lifted enough for me to complete my first and second steps, I haven't been close to having a desire to drink. I pray that this condition will continue as I put my faith into action and keep going to meetings. Around my 14th month of going to AA meetings, I heard a voice inside me clarify that my pain did not mean I was broken. My pain was grief. I was grieving the loss of a 17-year marriage that was coming to an end, and I was fearful that I might not see my boys again. I realized that this pain I felt was okay, and that perhaps it would be concerning if I hadn't been feeling this way. One day in April of 2020, I had a breakthrough. At the Sunday morning meeting of my home group, a guy named Woody was celebrating 24 years. He was with his family and shared that they were the gift of the program. His wife and kids were sitting there looking at him, so happy and full of joy. This time, the pain I felt as I heard him speak and saw his wife and happy kids was but a quick twinge. I suddenly had the realization that I was not losing my family. These important relationships, I began to see that the gift of this program was my newfound ability to form new, healthy, happy, and loving relationships with all of them. I was overcome. Today, my relationship with one of my sons has never been better. I have also been able to improve my relationship with my other son, as well as their mother. The divorce is a legal matter now. It's on paper. It doesn't mean the end to our relationship. It doesn't block happiness and joy, and it doesn't stop me from relating to the people I love and care about most. After that meeting that Sunday morning, I began to accept pain as part of a healthy healing process and not a problem to be fixed. I was completing step 6 on the issue of my divorce. I had to be accepting of the pain to be ready to have its cause removed. My breakthrough was a kind of 7th step, and my character defect of over-reliance on the legal marriage was removed. The pain had been lifted from me, just like my desire to drink was. Today, I do not fight back the tears nor avoid my boys or their mother anymore. I can interact with them without fear, openly, and at ease, bringing joy into their lives. We're still on step 6, which is the step of the month, Courage to Change by Kelly Espy of Seattle, Washington. My son is 16 and a sophomore in high school. Academic excellence is not important to him. I wonder where he gets that from. While my own high school achievements were not important to me, his academic success is. So much so that I have pushed us both to the point of causing fights, creating low self-esteem in him, and making him feel his efforts are not good enough. It was cheating so much stress and tension, creating so much stress and tension in our household. I knew this was a family struggle, but I didn't see the truth about how my behavior contributed to this conflict until my son told me how he felt. I was harming him. I really believed that if I just tried harder and kept at him, I would help him succeed, but I was so wrong. I knew I needed to change my behavior. In order to change and have God remove my defects, I needed to be willing to experience the fear and vulnerability that my son might fail and the horrible possibility that I might have failed him. That's a hard experience to walk through. Denial, justification, rationalization, and self-righteousness feel much more powerful and comfortable than fear. Feeling powerless and vulnerable takes guts. Courage comes from love, and my love for my son is more powerful than my fear of vulnerability. My love for him gives me the courage to be wrong. My love for him gives me willingness to go to God for help. Luckily, our steps have provided me with a working relationship with the higher power that solves all my problems. Now here we are at the end of the school year, and my son is at risk of failing 2 classes. As I read the emails from his teachers, my heart starts beating faster. My adrenaline was pumping. I started practicing my conversation with him about all the things I was going to take away from him and all the consequences he would suffer if he didn't focus and make improvements. Then I paused. I've been practicing what I call a breath prayer. I took one big breath, not really asking for anything specific, but just practicing being with God for a bit. Then I got up and left my computer and all these emails from the teachers and went on with my day. When I saw my son after school, I had an intuitive thought. It said, "Why don't you ask him how he wants to handle this situation?" And that is what I did. And he and I had a loving exchange and conversation. Turns out he had wonderful and manageable solutions. We both had a fantastic evening and our home was joyful. I thank God for that. I'm profoundly grateful for this program that really works. I have found a higher power in my life that helps me. My job is to see the truth about myself and have the loving courage to be wrong. Next, The Message is Free by S.S. of Minnesota. By swiping that book with the dumb nickname, a newcomer gets an early lesson on money, property, and authority. I stole my first big book. I rationalized doing it. I figured if it was helpful to me, maybe I'd pay for it later. It had been a few months since my last drink. I had no experience with the steps, so I was still consumed with fear and resentment. I justified my thieving. A book with such a dumb nickname wouldn't help me anyway. I just put the book back after I was proven right. But I was wrong. Soon into reading it, I was dumbstruck. Its content pierced my ego as I read the description of alcoholism as a disease. Somehow I knew there was really something wrong with me. I discovered I wasn't bad, I was sick. I experienced some hope, which was an odd sensation at the time. When I grabbed my big book, after checking that no one in the meeting was looking, my view of the literature was that it was a piece of property. It was just something for me to steal. Who would care? And besides, why should I get hustled by their peddling this book with the goofy nickname? The moment I identified with the AA message inside the book, however, that piece of literature changed. It went from being property to being a vehicle that transmitted a spiritual message, a language of the heart of one alcoholic sharing experience, strength, and hope with another. Now, I wouldn't have put it that way during that first read. All I knew for sure was that the book seemed to help me. So I continued reading, and soon 30 or 40 minutes vanished. While I don't remember all I read, I do remember the calm I felt after reading it, just like that hope I felt earlier. The calm was a strange sensation, too. My relationship to the big book has been one of money, property, and authority. Members of the 8-person group I attended on Wednesdays at noon mentioned the big book often. A couple of people even asked if I had a copy or if I had read any of it. I was nobody's fool. It was plain that these owners of the book were looking to make money by selling me some of their property. Actually, my ideas of money, property, and authority were diverting me from AA's primary spiritual aim. I had no clue that the book was not the group's property. It was a tool that could serve in AA's simple equation of one alcoholic helping another. Gratefully sober for some years now, I continued to grow in interest of how AA's services might be effective for my reaching other suffering alcoholics who might get the opportunity for a life-altering experience with AA literature that I had. By grace, I had sufficient open-mindedness for some part of the truth about me from that book to enter my being. It was like a beam of light entering into the total darkness of my untreated alcoholism. The book served as one alcoholic talking with another, and hope entered my life. Who can own a spiritual message? By the way, it turned out the group I stole the book from wasn't selling the big books. They were just for our use. In time, after experiencing a transformation through the steps, I would become a member of that group, contributing to the Seventh Tradition basket to help finance making big books available for other suffering alcoholics who showed up just like me. And that's the end of part two of the June edition of the AA Grapevine. We will continue on part three. Again, my name is Vicki Duke. I'm your volunteer broadcaster coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.